Hello and welcome to the 99th episode of the Autoblog Podcast. I'm Chris Shunk, and today I'll be joined by fellow autobloggers Jeremy Korzenewski and Dan Roth. What is going on, guys?
Very little in my neck of the woods.
You know, in between feedings, we fit in the podcast.
Absolutely. So the baby's going to let you do the podcast this week, Dan?
We might hear him in the background a little.
We're okay with that. Yeah, I have a dog, so you won't hear the dog.
All right.
All right, we've had a pretty interesting week in news. There's a lot to talk about. We're going to talk a little bit about the 100th podcast. We've got some emails from the readers. And by the way, if you want to send us any emails with questions or comments or anything that you'd like to add to the podcast, Dan, what's the email address?
It would be podcast@autoblog.com.
Yeah, please send it. And we love reading them. And we've got some really good ones this week. We're going to answer the ones we have. So, starting off with things, we always go to the Autoblog Garage, and Jeremy, you're up first, and I bet you have a bike.
I do currently have a bike in the garage. Right now I have an Aprilia RSVR, which is a 1,000cc V-twin sport bike, extremely uncomfortable, but rather fast.
It sounds Italian.
Yeah, it does sound Italian. It looks Italian, and it feels Italian. And earlier this week, we published our second in the Autoblog garage motorcycle review, which was the Aprilia SXV 550. So fans of things other than Aprilia, hold on. We had a Harley earlier, and we've got plenty more bikes lined up that are not all Italian. So we've got stuff for everybody.
That Harley's now, awesome. That's the Night Rod that you had, right?
Yeah, we had the Night Rod Special. Fast, pretty wicked looking, but really expensive.
Jeremy, how was the reader reaction to the Aprilia? Obviously, we're autoblogged, but there are a lot of motorcycle lovers out there. What was the reader reaction?
It was highly favorable for the most part. There were, I think, two or three dissenters who said, this is Autoblog, I don't care about motorcycles, but, you know, our new comments rating system, if you check the ratings in those comments, they got buried. So it seems like the people have spoken. They like the motorcycles, and we're happy to oblige.
Hey, man, $4 gas makes motorcycles just as interesting as cars, and they're a lot of fun for not as much money.
And they're rocket fast.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Yeah, pretty darn fast.
Yeah.
Dan, what did you have in the garage this week?
This week it's a repeat of March. Got the 2008 Maxima 3.5 SL, which is a very nice car. The V6 is excellent. The CVT is the best in the business. The car is big. The seats are comfy. That's about it.
And it's not the new one, so we're done talking about it.
Right,
so,
exactly. No. It's dead in the water.
There was the first drive for the Maxima in the Autoblog probably 4 or 5 days ago, and I just every time I look at that car, it just strikes me as something that just isn't all that pleasant to the eye.
You know, every time I look at it, it gets better and better. And if it drives as well, at least as well as the current one, it's great, and it's, from what I understand, it's been improved, so it's only going to get better. It's a great car.
Yeah, I gotta side with Dan on this one. I thought it was hideous the first time I saw it, but
yeah,
it's actually kind of growing on me, which that usually doesn't happen with me in cars. My first response is usually the one that I keep. Like, I hated the look of the current Accord. I still hate the look of the current Accord. And the Camry, I think, is really ugly. But the Maxima, it's actually growing on me.
What about it is growing on you? Because that front end, every time I look at it, it's staring back at me.
No,
but
see,
it doesn't have it doesn't have a happy face. It doesn't have a sad face. It looks like, you know, that those little emoticons that lame people use, and it's the big eyes with the very straight mouth. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, it's definitely not.
Watch it, Chris. I use those emoticons all the time.
I think I do too when I'm on my famous rants. It's not a happy face, but it's definitely got a certain look to it. And you're not going to mistake it for anything other than a Maxima for at least a little while. And it comes together, and maybe it's just seeing it in certain light and certain pictures versus seeing it at the auto show where we all got our first glimpse of it in New York, it's starting to look better to me. Now when one lands in my driveway, I'll be able to give you the official word.
Well, you know it's going to drive good because the current model drives very well in the is it the VQ engine?
Yes.
The Nissan engines, that 3.5 is just solid. It's extremely solid. It's torquey. It's powerful. Those two things together makes a pretty decent vehicle in general.
Yeah.
The looks, I don't think I'm ever going to warm up to it like you guys
well,
do.
Well, I got
to
say.
Hey, you know what? There's other cars out there, you know?
My personal,
that's the beauty of it.
My personal opinion, that Japanese cars should look Japanese, and I think that the Maxima does look like a Japanese car. I actually feel the same way about motorcycles. Think that Japanese bikes should be angular. They should look mean and angry. Italian bikes should be, you know, flowing and, you know, have larger surface areas. And I think the same is true with cars. I want Japanese cars to look like a Japanese car. My American cars to look like American cars. You know, I want them to be readily identifiable. And that's kind of how I feel about, because, I mean, Japanese cars, they usually have face look to them on the front. They kind of have that human sort of appearance. And
Kabuki mask?
There you go. Just like that. So that sums it up for me. That's why I don't mind.
And, you know, I agree with you with cars, but if I ever buy a motorcycle, it's going to be a Honda or a Yamaha that looks like a Harley.
Yeah, well, because it'll, you know, it'll be a lot less expensive.
It'll be less expensive, I had a neighbor who had a Honda generator, and I had a, you know, a Briggs & Stratton generator, and I didn't know his was on, and mine was vibrating my house.
Yeah, but you can't hate on the Briggs, man. You could put sawdust and marbles and pea gravel in the engine, and that thing would still run.
Yeah, and I agree, but I think that applies to the Honda, too. Those things are just sterling. Yeah. You can't beat a Honda small engine, but I think on the from everything I've heard, and Jeremy, you might know otherwise, but the motorcycle Hondas are just rock solid.
They are extremely rock solid, unkillable.
Okay, let's go on to the next thing. I think a lot of auto bloggers know that we are big fans of Top Gear. 11th season is now out, and I think everybody's excited about that. Damon posted on it earlier today, and obviously there are some corresponding YouTube videos. There's 6 in total. I know you guys didn't watch it yet. I watched probably about 20 minutes of it so far. It's good to see him back on the air, first off.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. I love Top Gear. It's by far the best automotive show on television. Like, the only other one that jumps quickly to is Motor Week, and I can't think of a more boring way to spend a half an hour on a Saturday morning, and I do not get that feeling,
you know,
with Top Gear.
There's such polar opposites. Motor Week is the PBS way of doing it, and Top Gear is the $2 million per episode, really eye-catching way of doing it, and personally, I'm far more entertained by Top Gear, whether or not they're bombastic. I mean, it's just, anytime you ever think of doing like an autoblog video kind of thing, you know, you look at Top Gear and you go, well, I might as well just quit, because it looks...
That's my problem.
It looks beautiful. It's done so well. There's nowhere to go. They own it.
It's time and resources. They have both in spades, and they get... I mean, seriously, if Clarkson calls any automaker on the planet and says, tomorrow I want X, he's getting it. There's never going to be another way around it. So, I mean, I was just watching the test run with the F430 Scuderia, and it got very glowing reviews, and Clarkson basically said that it was really good to be driving a proper Ferrari again, and The way they deliver their lines, the beauty of the video, it's all very good stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, next up, the Acura NSX seems to be the poster child of KGB photography. I mean, there are every other spy shot's either a 2010 Mustang or the Acura, but first off, you guys have seen it. What do you guys think of the look so far?
Looks like a Ferrari, kind of like the original NSX did.
I don't know. It's covered up in all this crap, but it
I guarantee you it's going to have a hideous, hideous grill.
Honda, we were talking about this earlier. Honda styling, I don't know, but I bet it'll look Japanese, so I probably won't mind it too much.
Maybe they'll give it the pilot grill. That's hot.
The pilot grill probably weighs about as much as two of the wheels.
That means it looks substantial, and they got their they wanted out of it.
Yeah.
Now, the NSX, obviously, it looks cool from what we could tell. I mean, all that black and white camo can throw you off. But I think the cool thing that we heard last week was that the NSX actually lapped the ring unofficially at 7:37, and they didn't even know anybody was watching.
Yeah, and their goal is what? To beat the GTR, which is what, 7:29?
Yeah, that's a good goal.
Well, yeah, good luck with that. Actually, looking at it from one of the head-on shots now with the zoom lens, I'm seeing a little Accord coupe in the doors. I'm not sure I'm liking that too much. If it's going to come out like a $100,000 Accord coupe, you can keep it.
I thought 350Z when I first saw it.
I see in the back end, from the doors back, I actually see Civic Del Sol.
Excellent.
Yeah.
You're right,
and that's
too.
That's not good.
You're so right.
Oh, come on. Yeah, Del Sol was a hot... Oh, I love the stacked exhaust, too, like the Lexus ISF. F is for fugly.
I don't know. The Del Sol was fine,
but if you're gonna
create a car that, you know, is supposed to be the epitome of performance, I don't think that's the styling that you want to go for.
That's why you don't lead any late major automakers right there. That's crazy talk.
Yeah, that must be what it is.
We'll see how it goes. You know, there's potential. Those taillights could, you know, they look like they flatten off at the top, and there's some nice haunches, and yeah, we'll see it without the crap on it, and it'll look good. It'll look really good.
If it has a V10 and it has 550 horsepower and it's cranking around the ring at 7 minutes flat, I'm sure none of us will be complaining about the styling.
Because
the GTR isn't like the prom queen. It's like the girl that was very athletic and had broad shoulders, but she's getting a scholarship to a really cool school that you get to party to. So, I mean, maybe that was too far, but, you know, the point is it's not that pretty.
I can't follow that, Chris.
I'm confused. All I'm saying is, all these cars, ZR1.
Yeah, I'm...
If you have passengers, CTS-V.
I was just going to say that. If I'm going to buy a ZR1, I might as well just get a CTS-V. I mean, performs nearly as good.
Now, oh man, that ZR1 is going to absolutely floor people. I cannot wait. Cannot wait to see how fast that thing goes around the ring. And you know what? Reputation-wise, GM absolutely has to beat the GTR if they're going to pull off the quote-unquote ultimate Corvette of all time.
It's going to be interesting to see if they can actually beat the GTR, because the GTR's chassis is incredible. It's not necessarily rewarding to drive because it just does what it does in such a machine-like fashion. And the vet's going to be down an axle when it comes to being able to claw its way through corners. So
there's something to be said.
It may not beat the GTR.
There's something to be said, though, for keeping it simple. I mean, as far as sports cars go, you know, front engine, rear wheel drive, they've been doing it for a long time. They know how to make it work. You know, maybe it's not as technologically advanced as the GTR, but, you know, we can pull for the underdog American for half the price, right?
Absolutely, and you know what? It's not going to make one bit of difference whether it goes around the ring 10 seconds slower, because it's still going to be an awesome car. So who cares?
Yeah, and you know the great part is, maybe three ZR1 owners that do not work at GM will ever go on the ring at any given time, so it won't matter.
You know, just like everything else, that one measure, it's like quarter mile isn't everything. Time around the ring isn't everything. It's such a specific, specialized application, and it's a really good area to test the cars and tune them for real-world performance, because the track has so many elevation changes and different handling challenges, but it's not the end of the world if it's not the fastest car around the ring ever.
Well, I think people got tired of 0-60, and as soon as the 0-60 times got so ridiculous, so, I mean, I think the ZR1's quoted at 3.4 seconds. The CTS-V, which is a sedan that weighs 4,300 pounds, is going to hit 60 in 3.9 seconds. That is so absurd.
You know how fast? I mean, that's as fast as a 95 911 turbo.
Yeah, and I think maybe even few of the newer 911s as well. So there aren't too many vehicles on the road, period, that are in the threes. But Yeah, I definitely the ring is the new hot number that everybody likes to quote. All right, next off we have the crazy situation with gas. I mean, cops are charging for gas when you get tickets. People are stealing gasoline and diesel by the tens of hundreds of gallons. And I mean, right now it's like gas pandemonium out there.
It is, yeah. Writing for Autoblog Green as well as Autoblog, we cover that kind of thing all the time. What was the figure that someone actually managed to steal last week? And what,
$20,000 worth, 4,000
gallons of gas. How? I just don't understand how you think that you can get away with stealing all that money. I mean, how long does it take to pump all that gas into a big container?
It's got to be at least an hour.
Well, yeah, it's got to be forever. Did they do it? There was one guy, wasn't it in Florida, who actually had a truck that was converted to be a tanker that he could.
Yeah, well, he had a Ford truck that he had a suspended 800 gallon gas tank that was professionally welded into the bed of the pickup truck, and he even had a key to disable the pump counting mechanism. I don't know how that works, but he disabled it, and then the only reason why he got caught is because he was there for too long.
Yeah, shouldn't that be worrisome to gas station owners and attendants around the world that there's these keys that apparently people can get to shut off the meters?
Well, that's why they think he was part of a larger ring of fuel theft, because that's the keys exist for the station owners and the service companies and things like that when they're servicing the pumps, from what I understand. So
yeah, and it's it's hard.
Think about the $9 an hour. I'm sorry. Jeremy, go ahead. It's all you.
It's hard to feel all that bad for the gas station companies like Exxon and all those ones with profits. But the one that, the people that are really getting hurt by those gas thefts are the station owners, because the profit margins on those gas stations are, next to nothing.
Yeah, and the higher the price goes, the thinner their margins get.
And because they know that the competition gets hotter, and if somebody's, it's so ridiculous, because when the gas is $3.99 a gallon at one store and it's $3.97 a gallon 3 miles down the road, everybody's going to go to that other gas station, and they're probably going to lose money in the process. And the difference, if they didn't go, is like 40 cents, and their bill is $80.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that nobody really considers is credit card companies. Who buys gas with cash now? Well, the higher the price of gas goes, the bigger a bite out of the profit of the sale the credit cards companies take. So the station owners are getting it from both ends. I mean, they can't win. The price goes up, they have to pay more to their credit card servicers.
The
price goes down, and they lose the money anyway.
And some of them are making some special charges for those people who do use credit cards. And some of them are capping the amount that you can purchase with a credit card because of that.
I've had that happen to me,
actually, when I filled up some media vehicles. It stops at like $50 or $75.
Yeah, I had one stop at $75.
Yeah, but that's exactly what happened when I was in Chicago. It stopped at $75, and this is when gas was $3 a gallon, and I had a Denali, a Yukon Denali. It was the extended one, and it was like $125 to fill the tank, and I had to actually go to two pumps to do it.
Yeah.
And it was right before we were going home, too, so I just wanted to get the tank filled so I can get all the way home without stopping again. But the one person in the entire equation that I feel the most sorry for is the gas station attendant that makes $9 an hour, that also has to refill the Slurpee machine and has to keep coffee hot and fresh and repackage the donuts and hear crap from customers that don't like paying $4 a gallon. And now they've got to be watching out for mob-run gas-stealing rings. I mean, the job is more ridiculous than like an elementary school teacher. They've got to do everything, too. So, I mean...
Well, there's always that old standby of a hold-up, too. The classic classic theft, so...
Yeah, exactly. Give them a bunch of credit card receipts, because that's all they're getting nowadays, so... anyways, let's go on to the next topic, and I think, in general, the malaise of the auto industry is becoming more and more apparent on a weekly basis. I mean, GM has postponed the redesign of its trucks and SUVs. Shifts are being cut. For example, the Expedition and Navigator is being cut. The F-150 launch, which is typically for Ford Motor Company, there is no more stressful, exciting, and potentially profitable time than when they have a redesign of a vehicle, and they've postponed it for 2 months because basically the thrill of owning a 2009 F-150 just isn't there. People aren't excited about buying the new F-150.
Yeah, and especially
not because it's a bad vehicle.
That particular vehicle, like, that's Ford's biggest seller. It just now got knocked off of its 20-plus year run of being the best-selling vehicle in the U.S.
Right. They would rather have one F-150 than five Mustangs. I mean, that's how big it is. I mean, if they could have five different successes on the scale of a Mustang versus one F-150, they would take the truck. Until now. I think now is a totally different time. I mean, obviously, Chrysler's hurting badly. Even Toyota has laid off 200 workers at one of their plants, and they're shifting truck production over to Camry. So obviously everything's up in the air. Dan, what do you think?
This is what an adjustment looks like, folks. Silence, excellent.
We were hoping for a little bit more prose there from you, Dan, and usually we get it.
You know, well, this is what happens. You know, Ford's, why would they introduce the F-150? Even though it's pretty much mostly done, they're just waiting for job one at this point for the most part. It's not going to sell. They're going to pile up on lots. They got dealers that have 2008 inventory to get rid of that they can't move. And then they're not going to make any more of the big Expedition ELs and the Navigators and stuff. That's not going to sell. They need to shift all of their focus to where the money is, just like they did when SUVs were the hot thing. So now they need to look at what's popular now, and by the time they ramp up their small car program, who knows? You know, fuel could be a little bit of pressure could be removed from that, but I doubt it. And I hope pressure stays high on the price side just so that we all kind of readjust our lifestyles to a more rational energy use. But this is what happens. This is the market. This is the temporary pain that will lead to a shift in behavior.
Jeremy, what do you think?
Isn't it Phil Collins who said this is the world we live in? Yeah, that's pretty much.
That's a good video.
I'm a child of the '80s. What can I say? Dan's absolutely right. That's just the way that it is. It was kind of funny though today. You know, everyone's talking about, you know, people are killing their V8 engines and cutting truck production, moving shifts. Even Toyota, like you said, those 200 were actually temporary workers who were hoping to be hired on full time.
Doesn't matter. They're still cutting a paycheck until that happens.
Agree.
So, temporary or not, it doesn't matter to me.
Did you see today, maybe Toyota thinks it can sell some more trucks by creating even more powerful, more expensive, even more fuel-hungry versions on, you know, called Iron Man series trucks? That strikes me.
This is the company that makes the Prius, though, right? They're the greenest thing going.
Yes, absolutely. Well, the Prius is a green car, and no one's... Not no one, because some people think they're less green than Hummers, but whatever. They make hybrids. They make hybrids because people want hybrids, and they make pickup
absolutely.
Trucks because people want pickup trucks. I think it's questionable timing to introduce a new 500-something horsepower Iron Man Tundra that's going to cost $20,000 more than the regular Tundra. I think that research and development costs could possibly be better spent elsewhere, but, you know, that's why I'm, as Chris said, that's why I'm not on a major automaker's board making these types of decisions.
Well, you know, and there's nothing really wrong with the performance of the regular Tundra with that iForce, the 5.7. That's an incredibly powerful engine. You don't feel like that truck is slow.
No, it's the quickest one out there already.
Yeah, and you know what? I to me, in some ways, Toyota really is a green company. In other ways, they're kind of like the David Blaine of automakers because I mean, it seems like they're pulling one over everybody's eyes because I mean, everything else that they like. If you look at the RX 350, if you look at the Highlander, if you look at anything other than the Camry, the Corolla, and the Prius, those are pretty high volume models, but there isn't spectacular. Fuel economy anywhere else out there that I could see, but and I'd like for it to be that way.
Toyota's out to make money. just like any other corporation's out to make money. And if, I mean, anyone thinks that the, you know, the suits and the bean counters at Toyota created the Prius and their hybrid synergy drive because, you know, they're overly concerned about greenhouse gas emissions and fuel usage, that's not the case. They're concerned about making money and selling the vehicles that people want, and they were just foresighted enough all those years back in the late 90s to start working on it before it really became a big issue, and you know that's why they're in the position they're in today.
You're a blasphemer. They're the greenest company out there. The Prius, you know, it's just best thing ever.
They would love to be making Tundras and Sequoias at capacity at those plants in San Antonio. Absolutely. And every place, just as much as Ford would like to be selling 2 million F-150s per year like they used to.
Yeah, and you know what? They make a whole pile more cash on the trucks than they do on those very fancy, exotic hybrids that work incredibly well and are extremely well-engineered.
But are really boring to drive.
Yeah, and there's a lot less R&D on a truck, too, I would suppose, than it would be in creating a brand new way of getting from point A to point B. Okay, let's go on to the next topic, and kind of, Jeremy hit on it very briefly. Ford has actually killed the Boss V8 program, at least 90% of it. I mean, they had it scheduled for the F-150, the Mustang, and the Super Duty, and now Mike Levine over at PickupTrucks.com has gotten it from several sources that it will only be available on the Super Duty. So obviously that's just another part of the big shift away from fuel-thirsty vehicles.
Yeah.
Well, and I bet that engine is a lot more expensive to produce than the majority of the people that are buying the 5.4-liter.
I don't know that, because I was under the impression that it was a pushrod V8.
That doesn't make it cheap, though. I mean, that just makes it an efficient package when you consider the usage of the engine. I mean, it's compact.
Right, but doesn't the overhead, I always was under the impression that those were more expensive.
I would guess that you're right, because there's four camshafts instead of one, or at least two. But, I don't know if that's the only cost in the engine is the valve train too. I mean, they're
right. Well, then the three valve versus two valve. I think it was going to be the current one's a three valve, and then this one was going to be a two valve, like the Hemi and the Chevy 6.2 liter.
Yeah.
All right. So that's obviously just another thing that's going on. That, and I'm sure there were plenty of Mustang owners out there that would have loved to have seen a 400 horsepower and naturally aspirated Mustang out there. And I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, there is. I'll just interject here. There is a Boss engine that you can purchase out of Ford's racing catalog, which is designed specifically for racing applications and drag racing in particular. It's the same kind of block that they use in their in John Force's racing team. So that's my understanding, is that is a completely different animal from this Boss. In case we get any, or in case anyone's wondering about that, or in case we get any emails afterwards that, you know, about the Boss program, those are separate engines. This is a Boss that they were going to put in the big pickup trucks and possibly even the SUVs.
Is that the 302 Cammer crate engine?
No, the one that I'm talking about is it's an aluminum block engine that it's based on Chrysler Hemi technology from the 60s, but it's, you know, Ford took it and redid it and straightened up some of the different pushrod passages, strengthened it up where they needed to, and they sell that under the Boss name through their Ford Racing division.
Is that a 429? Because I know there was a Boss 429, which I believe was Hemi back in the day, back in 1969, 70, something like that.
There was the Boss 429 that did use that similar type of technology, but no, this is something completely different. This is it's, you know, because in drag racing the NHRA has been using a Chrysler style Hemi block for every manufacturer from Ford, Dodge, even Toyota. Anyone who's mm-hmm. racing in NHRA uses a basic Chrysler-designed Hemi engine. And just recently, what was it, 3-4 years ago, Ford decided that they didn't want to be running Chrysler-based engines in their drag team, so they came up with their own. It's not the Boss 429. It has nothing to do with the Boss engines of the 60s, and it has nothing to do with the Boss that we're talking about here. It's a completely separate racing engine.
Okay.
All right, next up on the docket, we've got the Volkswagen Jetta. The TDI going to be priced from $21,990, and since Jeremy, you are one of the biggest posters in all of Autoblog Greenland, I'll let you start first there.
There's more to the story than just the pricing, even though $21,990 is, depending on how you look at it, it looks like a $4,000 premium over the base Jetta. It is, but if you look at what comes in the TDI trim, it's actually equivalent to the SE trim, and if you compare apples to apples, you're actually looking at more like a $2,000 premium. And what's especially interesting about the new Jetta TDI for 09 is that the EPA rated that at 30 miles per gallon in the city and 41 miles per gallon on the highway, which
most people would take.
Well, that's not bad. That's really not bad. But, we were just talking earlier about how people consider the Prius the sort of the green flag-bearing standard by which all other alternative vehicles are judged. And it doesn't compare all that favorably with what the EPA says that those hybrids would get. So you're thinking, okay, what's the deal here? I thought, these new diesels were going to be really, really great on fuel economy. So Volkswagen actually went to a third party called AMCI, who I've never before, but whatever. And they actually did their own testing on a Jetta TDI. And they are, that's the number that Volkswagen is quoting in all their materials. And that number is 38 in the city, which is 8 better in the city, and 44 on the highway, which is 3 better on the highway. If those are the real numbers, that's fine. No one has a problem with that if that's what the real numbers are. But that kind of opens up a can of worms.
But those aren't the real numbers, though. They're making crap up. I mean, the real numbers are the EPA numbers. That's what everybody else cites.
And that's the issue. And a lot. It's been true forever that when the EPA tests a small, quote-unquote, clean diesel engine, it never comes up with numbers that look like they're hybrid beating. But in the real world, people kind of just know, people who are, quote-unquote, in the know and actually follow these things, people know that those diesels post better numbers than what the EPA cites. But that doesn't give Volkswagen in most people's opinion, it doesn't give them the right to just come up with their own arbitrary numbers through whatever testing procedures AMCI chooses to use, who knows, and just come up with these, pull these numbers out of blue, 38 city, 44 highway. Can every auto manufacturer do that now?
Look, for everything that's wrong with the EPA tests, the unrealistic rate of acceleration, the unrealistic top speed, which are all of which was adjusted this year, which caused everybody's fuel economy ratings to shift down. I'm just going to put a bunch of numbers on a few pieces of paper and throw them into a hat and just start making stuff up for Autoblog tests, because it's just that's basically what they're doing. They weren't pleased with the EPA numbers, so they came up with someone who'd give them better numbers to quote in their advertising, which is fine, whatever. I mean, you can drive a vehicle so that you could probably drive a Jetta TDI so that it gets 55 miles per gallon. That doesn't...
Wait a minute, Dan. You don't make stuff up?
No.
Me neither.
I have a high level
keep
of
going.
Truthiness.
I'm sorry.
Inside joke.
Good. Thank goodness. Yeah. Yes.
No, I don't make stuff up. I try to be an informed commenter, and the people who read my pieces sometimes disagree. I mean, that's fine.
Truthiness.
But really, first of all, I don't doubt that the Prius is actually going to post better fuel economy, real world, and EPA. than the Jetta TDI. That's not saying that the Jetta TDI doesn't do better than a gas Jetta, and that's not saying that the benefits of the TDI aren't multifold over the hybrid vehicle. It's just, you know, again, it's getting hung up on a number, and the number is going to vary with driving style, and you have to make adjustments in your driving, in your lifestyle, the amount of trips you take, the length of those trips, the amount of stops. It's not just, you can't live in a bubble. It's not just one thing. You have to make large, sweeping, multifaceted changes to really lower your fuel consumption and for any kind of meaningful thing. And buying a vehicle is not really a great way to save the environment.
Yeah, well,
you know, the sad part about the whole fuel thing and the cost of fuel, I honestly believe that if the market was going better in the housing sector, first of all, they'd be selling a lot more trucks. But second of all, I think people would be trying to sell their homes in an effort to move closer to where they work. But with the housing market being so horrible and subprime mortgages and everything in between and people being upside down in their mortgages, they can't get out of their house, so they're stuck with what they've got. And I think the only thing that they can have is something that is more fuel efficient, like this Jetta. And I understand what you're saying completely, Dan, but I sort of disagree, because I think if, as Jeremy said, people in the know that the diesels are basically unfairly treated in the EPA. Is that what you're saying,
well,
Jeremy?
Well, it's not that they're unfairly treated. It's that they're treated the exact same way as gas vehicles, which just isn't the case in the real world. You know.
Well, sure it is. People constantly, I mean, that was always the complaint. Well, diesels are noisy and smoky compared to a gas engine. They're always consistently compared with a gasoline vehicle, and they're treated like a gasoline vehicle, which is why a lot of the Oldsmobile diesels blow
okay.
up. I mean, you know,
okay.
head gasket problems aside.
I'm still confused. So, Jeremy, just...
Okay,
just,
what I was...
Okay, if the EPA... Well, I'm going to make it real simple. If the EPA has two vehicles that say get exactly 30 miles per gallon, and one's a diesel and one's a gasoline engine, which one's going to get better real fuel economy 10 times out of 10, regardless of driving
dynamics? Well, okay, it's going to be the diesel. And the reason is because when you're... The EPA gives... the same percentage of throttle openings and all that kind of stuff for a diesel engine as it does for gasoline engines. But the nature of a diesel engine is that you don't open the throttle nearly as much, nearly as often, because you have all that torque right off idle. So you're going to accelerate with traffic from stoplight to stoplight, stop sign to stop sign, at a smaller throttle opening in a diesel than you are in a gasoline engine, and the EPA tests don't reflect that.
I'm very thoroughly happy with that answer, and for that reason, I think that they should be able to. Because basically, they're starting. You know, everybody else they get two guns. One gun sounds, and the gasoline engines can take off, and then they get a second gun, and they can take off. So it's unfair, and there should be a different way of testing diesels. And I think
I agree
with the EPA for not doing it.
I don't know. I like the blanket test.
I like the blanket test too. I think, well, okay, actually, I should take that back. I don't like the blanket test, but I think that until there's something better, the blanket test is the best thing that we've got. I don't think it's okay.
Look, there's never going to be a perfect test.
Well, I just don't think it's okay to go around what we have, because you could make whatever numbers you wanted to. I do think the EPA should have some sort of special testing for diesel vehicles now that we're going to be seeing a lot of them on the roads. But until they do, you've got to take what you've got, and you've got to take the EPA numbers. That's what I say.
Right, but at the same time, Volkswagen's still rolling the dice and saying, okay, this is the real number, and they know for a fact that if they come out with unrealistic numbers, and as Dan says, just throw a number out there, it will work for a month or two, but word will get out, and you know, 7 o'clock or the 6 o'clock news is going to say, you know, have a story on, you know, Volkswagen pulled one over everybody's eyes, and then nobody's going to ever buy yeah. one again. So I mean, basically, if they come up with a commercial that says 38 and 44, and they don't deliver on it, it's only yeah. going to hurt them.
Yeah, well,
because if they said they said 30 and 41, and they get 38, or you know, combined 38 or 40, because people don't care between city and highway, they just want to hear what their combined number is going to be, and if they don't get somewhere in that range, they're gonna look at Volkswagen with a dishonest eye.
Well, yeah, and we're just got to see how it plays out.
Yeah, exactly. What they really need to do is send one to us so we can run it through our Autoblog garage and see what we get. I mean, I typically actually tend to better the EPA combined mileage unless I get something extremely entertaining.
The better it is, the worse the gas mileage.
Yeah, and it's driving style. It's the way I drive, and it's, you know, somebody else would get worse mileage. You know, I mean, look at Car and Driver; they get terrible miles per gallon in vehicles that I've gotten pretty decent miles per gallon in. So it's a lot of it has to do with the amount of drivers and the driving style. So we just need to try one out.
I'm just guessing that Tudor is already on it, and so is Sam.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to be one of the first people who have a story on real-world mileage, and it should be in comparison. We should have other vehicles there, and we should be able to compare apples to apples pretty shortly.
And 38 and 44 sound a whole lot more realistic from historically what Volkswagen diesels have been able to put up. So
hopefully that's right about what we get. So, all right, let's go to the questions. We've got a few emails. And once again, Dan, that email address is
podcast@autoblog.com.
I keep forgetting, and you don't, so you keep getting to say it over and over again. All right, we got three really good ones this week. First of all, thank you for saying that you like the show, but basically the question is, he has $15,000, and he wants something for the vehicle. He wants a vehicle for the weekend driving, and he wants it for the track, and he wants to have a manual. What would you guys spend on that money? What would you guys spend that money on if you had the money and wanted to do what he does? Starting with Jeremy.
$15,000. Okay, I am a motorcycle guy, so I'd run out and get a motorcycle. Barring that,
there you go.
Barring that, Damon set an excellent precedent when he went out and got what's the designation? The
E36
BMW. His a 318. I would probably try to step up to the 325 or 328.
For 15, you might be able to find an M3.
Yeah, but see, I wouldn't go that route, and here's why. I'll take the best condition six-cylinder BMW E36 that I can get, and, you know, let's say I spend $10,000 for it. Well, that gives me $5,000 to put into new suspension, new tires, and a really good tune-up, because those are going to be the most, you know, arguably, those are going to be the most important things. Maybe a brake upgrade. Those are what's going to make the car, you know, really respond on the track. Don't dump all the money into go fast stuff. You gotta spend the money where it's needed, in the turns and in the brakes. And
remember, there's a couple grand that you're gonna have to tie up in wheels and tires.
Yeah, exactly. So I would stick with a six cylinder E36, a 325 or a 328 if I could find one.
Solid choice.
How about you, Dan?
You know, it's pretty difficult to do any worse, do any better than a Miata, first or second generation. Those are pretty good cars for the track for not a lot of money. There's a lot of choices. If you're into modifying, you can get, the world is your oyster at that point. I mean, $15,000 is a lot of money to spend. It depends on what you're looking for.
Yeah,
off the top of my head, I'd say a Miata.
I could drop one more into that list. RX-7. Would be a pretty cool choice if you can find one that has a ton of miles on it. Yank the engine, send it off to a good rotary rebuilder, get some ceramic Apex seals put on it. You know, you can dump, if you can find one for $5,000-$6,000, you could dump $10,000 into the motor, and that would be a real fun car.
Yeah, while it's out, make sure it's ported and bridged.
Yeah, ported. You put a good port on it.
I mean, I guess the sentimental side of me would be looking for a something really esoteric, like a Volvo 780 with a, you know, very modern GM V8 in it. You know, something like an LS3 would be fine in there, and it's plenty of horsepower. It doesn't have to be wild, doesn't have to have a radical cam, be everyday useful, and it's a little obscure car. And
780?
Screaming around a track.
That's not a little, yeah, that's not a little obscure. That's really a Volvo that was, that was a Bertone, wasn't it?
It was a Bertone 780. There's about 5,000 of them made. It's pretty hard to find one that hasn't been picked up by someone and kind of fiddled with. They were either turbo or V6. Or just like a 740 sedan. You can get one for nothing.
Okay, and but fun. Back to reality.
Yeah, you guys hit the,
Yeah.
You guys hit the big the big hitters there. The Miata. A lot of racers picked through the Miata. RX-7. I was going to say maybe an early model RX-8, and I know it's not as maybe as fast as the RX-7, but I love the handling and the old stalwart. The you can get an old Mustang for.
I was just going to say,
cheap.
Yeah, Fox Body Mustang.
And, yeah, and you could do just about anything to those things, and they'll fly. I mean, obviously, if you've got a lot of turns where you race, it's probably not the best place. But if you're going a straight line, I don't think there are too many better options than a Mustang.
Well, we've solved that problem.
All right, let's go to the next one. And that guy's not going to pick any of those, cause, except for maybe that Xpeer Volvo that I don't even know what you're talking about.
He's going to get a Focus SVT and be done with it, just like Neff.
Is he getting one? He hasn't.
I thought he wanted one.
No, I don't think so. I think he's going to stick with his Oldsmobile Alero for a little bit longer.
He just wanted to talk about it for a while, and that's okay. That's fun to do, too.
He's such a tease. He should get a new car. We're all excited for him to get a new car so we can blow up the Alero.
He had found somebody within 10 miles of his house with an SVT Focus, and I was going to be the guy that went and checked it out for him, and I was so excited about it, and I was going to take video and pictures. Seriously, if my next door neighbor tells me tomorrow I'm looking for new cars and I wanted to stop by about 7 dealerships, I'd be like, I'm driving, get in. I don't even know my next door neighbor, and that would just be fine with me, and I could do that all day, and I'm sure you guys probably aren't too far behind there. All right, let's go to the next one. And speaking of Focuses, the guy says hello, and I know the Euro Focus is supposed to be much better than the U.S. spec, but what really is the difference? And he's only read that it's better, quote unquote, in every way. What is the big deal all about? Dan, go first.
Lack of fender vents.
Yeah.
A rear end that is not hideously mangled. The Euro Focus is the Mazda 3. It is the Volvo C30. It is better, but Ford must know something that we don't, because the new Focus is selling pretty well, and I think that's got a lot to do with the price of fuel, but also it almost appears as if the styling that we all hate has resonated in some way with the larger public. So, what the heck do we know? But yeah, it's a better car, but I don't think they could bring it here for the price that they're selling the current Focus.
Well, they can, because they do with the Mazda 3.
Well, I guess that's always the argument, and I don't understand that. Look, it's the C1 platform.
You could modify the suspension part so that one C1 is less expensive than the other, and they've been doing it for every vehicle from the beginning of time since platform sharing existed.
Yeah.
And I mean, in Ford's, I mean, just look at the Taurus versus the MKS, and Sam drove both of them, and he said the MKS was just as good as the Jaguar or better. The Jaguar XK, and we're talking about versus a Taurus, and it's the same platform. So obviously, you could spend a lot of money on any given platform.
Yeah, and you know what? The C1 with the engines that are in the Focus now, that'd be a heck of a small car. There's nothing wrong with that car. Again, we have it as the Mazda 3 already. So I don't know why they're dragging their feet on bringing it over. Maybe it's a capacity issue where they just don't have any reserve capacity. And now I'm really just grasping at straws because I have no idea. But
it scares me because it's still 2 years away. I mean,
yeah.
It's two full years plus about 4 months.
Look,
away
that,
from
that
arriving
car
here.
Should have been here yesterday.
It should have been there in 2005, and the reasoning for it was because the first generation Focus that was such a hit in Europe from the second it hit the shore, and it was lauded for its quality, and it was lauded for its styling. It was progressive. It had great driving dynamics. I had it 02. It was great. Then they botched the launch here in the U.S. and the quality was horrible, and instead of looking in the mirror, they blamed the Europeans for making a quote-unquote substandard product, and they tried to cut all these corners, because they said, well, we've got high labor costs, we've got to cut corners here, we've got to do this, we've got to do that, and they rushed it to market, and it stunk it stunk big out of the gates. I mean, the joke was recalls in Focus. I mean, how many were there the first 2 years, like 80? It was ridiculous. And then whenever it came time for the new one, they're like, oh, no, we don't need your problems, Europe. We're going to do our own. Typical American style, thinking process. And so they rebuild the other one. When they did the 08, rumor has it, when they redesigned it, it ended up costing so much that they should have used the C1 in the first place.
Really? Because that's what I was going to say. Is it a profit margin thing? I mean, or is it a plant thing? You know, whatever plant supplies us with our focus capacity here in the U.S. can't be switched over to C1, and there's no capacity elsewhere to make the focus on a C1 line without hurting any other of the brands. I don't know.
I'll throw
they,
in.
I mean, they could do anything with it, and just we'd support them.
It's possible. I don't know this. Again, I'm grasping at straws. But union deals have anything to do with? I don't know what plants they're currently building the focus in off the top of my head. But if they have union contracts,
the Wayne Assembly.
Can that plant be easily switched over to build C1 platform, or you know, would that be too expensive?
So it would be expensive, and they would have to stop production of the current Focus to do it.
Yeah.
And what's going to happen is, and I just did the post on it today, and which will you guys, it'll be yesterday, but basically they're going to have it in two plants, and what I'm guessing is going to happen is they're going to continue producing the current platform Focus until the other Focus plant is ramped up for a few weeks, if it stays as quote-unquote as hot as it is throughout the entire model cycle. And then they'll switch over, and I don't know if you guys remember when they had like Malibu Classic and then the other Malibu, and they did that with a couple other things. But that's the kind of thing you do whenever you don't want to, you know, stop production for anything, and you still have to put a new product out. And they'll produce it in two factories, and hopefully they'll also bring other vehicles from Europe that are on the C1 platform or the C1 V2, whatever they're going to call it, for 2010. But it's going to be tricky if everything stays the way it is, because people are going to really want what they've got.
Yeah, well, if they call it the Focus Classic, they're done, because there's nothing classic about the Focus that we've got. And they really, you know, the big difference is that the Mazda 3 has tons of acclaims about it, and the current Focus, I haven't heard anything about it since 2005 maybe.
Yeah, well, it's when it dropped off the 10 best list, I think it was 2005. But,
yeah.
The Mazda 3 still wins comparisons, and it hasn't been touched since 2004. Come on.
Yeah. So that's what the big deal is about.
Don't Europe get really cool versions of the Focus, too? Like the Focus ST and
the RS. Right?
So,
and,
you know, a lot of that, longing for the Euro Focus might have something to do with the cool versions of the platform that they get there to, which we, you know, would love to get here in the States.
You can't forget, it also looks a lot better.
Yeah. It looks cool looking. Awesome.
It looks very cool. I mean, have you ever seen the convertible Focus? I mean, I know you're not a fan of convertibles, Dan, but it is absolutely stunning to look at when you think that's a C-platform vehicle. It's gorgeous.
Look it up.
Now, the hatch isn't so pretty, but I mean...
See, I like the look of the hatch.
It looks...
Yeah, really? That's the one I like. But I like Volvo.
You're like oil to my water.
I like the old Volvo station wagons too. So you know, maybe there's no accounting for taste when it comes to me.
Hey, I like the old Volvo station wagons. There's nothing wrong with those.
See, Chris, you're the weird one.
People here online.
You're the weird one, Chris. Not me.
Yeah.
I think that's all up to opinion. I like Volvos. All right, let's go to the last question, and it is. And by the way, that was Jeremy in Seattle who asked that last question. And last, we have, how does the Hummer possible sale affect the military market? And does this mean that the military is going to stop using Hummers?
Well, I think you should go with that one.
Short answer is no. And the reason is because AM General makes the non-civilian Hummer.
AM General is not General Motors. No way, shape, or form.
Right. And they did not used to make the Eagle?
No.
No. So they're completely different... entity, and they do make, and they have different people making the military trucks versus the civilian trucks, and yeah, totally different.
Yeah, now the H1 was the Humvee, the civilian version, which they couldn't move those things really from day one. I mean, they started out as an $80,000 vehicle back in 94, 95, something like that. They were like a more high-end, not even, they weren't very high-end in the luxury sense, but they were just another expensive bauble like a Range Rover to show that you have money to burn.
Right, and it was between $130,000 and $140,000 when it stopped production in 2006.
Yeah, and hugely capable off-road, totally uncomfortable and not very practical.
Yeah, at least Range Rovers were comfortable and a nice place to find yourself in. The Hummer H1, not so much. You could, I mean, it's like,
you're
shouting across the gigantic hump in the center of the vehicle, even to talk to people. So it is gigantic.
It's, yeah, it is as wide as it can possibly be. It's like a square. It's a brick going down the road.
It's weird. Yeah. If you open the top, it has a car seat in there for kids. So that would be funny. Get in, honey. You got to go. Yeah. we got to traverse the mall. All right, that's all of it for the questions, and we're getting close to an hour. So those of you who say the podcast is too short, congratulations. Dan,
those of you who say it's too long, we're sorry.
Yeah, we apologize. You're done listening by now anyways if you thought it was too long. So,
right.
Anyways, Dan, podcast 100 is next week.
Yes.
And we've got some things planned, correct?
I don't know. Is this a quiz or?
No, I mean you changed the music, so that's going to be the first
the
surprise.
I'm working on the music. Hopefully, it'll be good. I don't know. We'll see. It's got to be better than the piece that we're currently using that I made for some corporate video back in 2002. So we're being green right now by recycling the music, and so.
Did you get out the Fender to make any of the music? Did you really?
Yeah, I had the Stratocaster on, work until like midnight, 1 a.m., something like that.
Baby crying in the background.
No, he was very good, so.
Good boy. All right, also, I think we're looking into giving some things away. We're looking at doing the 100-minute podcast, which might be tough. I'm sure there'll be more than the standard three.
I hope we have a large group. Yeah, I hope we all try to talk on top of each other and create pandemonium.
Well, that's the great thing is that's just more work for you because you're going to edit all that stuff out, right, Dan? So,
two words, noise gate.
So, hey, everybody, thanks for listening for this week, and please send in your questions for next week at...
podcast@autoblog.com.
I remembered it that time, but I figured we were just,
we should have made Jeremy do it. Jeremy, why don't you do it?
podcast@autoblog.com.
There we go.
Very news radio. All right.
You like that?
Thanks for listening, everybody, and we will see you next week for Big Number 100.